want to thank you for being with us. We'll certainly stay on this with KC Tenants and the newly launched Tenant Union Federation. And thank you to Heather Vogel, ProPublica reporter. We're going to link to your 2022 report, Rent Going Up, One Company's Algorithm Could Be Why. And we're going to have you back on to talk about the baby formula shortage and what the U.S. government can do about it. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cannabis is now legal in New York for those 21 and over, but we need to be mindful of where we use it. Secondhand smoke can impact those around you. For more information, visit cannabis.ny.gov.
That's right, and you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting over 90.1 FM, as well as 107.3 FM, and over the Internet at WUSB.FM. The time is just about 6 o'clock. It's a Tuesday evening, and that means, once again, it's time for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. it's going to create a problem for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I just think if you plan one thing, then you try to think about it again after it's changed.
On the air, Kyle. We can talk about this a little later. But we are back at the studio, the pseudo studio.
Well, you said you were working on it.
And the listeners know I'm working on it. What Kyle is concerned about is the theme, which when there's a new president or even a reelected president, we have to change the theme. And I think we're out of Philip Glass songs. Is that the concern?
Well, I just think if you'd planned for two original primary candidates, and then that changes if you what is that going to take longer because of that?
Let me just say, I wish Philip Glass had more pieces out. He has so few. But if Harris wins or if Trump wins, these are radically different pieces that are going to be the theme. Assuming that we're allowed to stay on the air, we'll just have to see what history brings us. We haven't even introduced ourselves. The program is Off the Wall. It's Emmanuel Goldstein here. Kyle is over there.
Occasionally.
And welcome back. We have been traveling throughout this great nation of ours. And I got to say, I had a lot of fun. I really did. I enjoyed seeing so many different places, meeting so many listeners in Vegas at the convention that we went to. That was so many people listened to Off the Wall and Off the Hook. And then just kind of exploring Los Angeles in our own way.
I'm overall impressed how easily you can move around
with a car.
Navigation and someone driving, you know, sharing that responsibility on a road trip.
Uh-huh.
A la road trip style. But throughout, I think multiple modes of transportation, things were fairly intuitive until they weren't. But most of that was by design. We really gave it our best and talked about that at length. But I enjoyed going up the coast and the highways, getting familiar with old roads and new roads.
We even stopped at an auto show in Monterey, California.
Well, we drove through it.
At night.
At night. We just stopped to have a drink.
It was still awesome because all these supercars were just kind of parallel parking on Main Street, and all these people were walking around.
Yeah, a mild amount of shenanigans, yeah.
Yeah, you just felt like you were a part of it. I would have liked to have stayed longer.
But we were passing through.
It was nice. Yeah, we were just passing through. No trouble.
But you realize there were so many, like, automobile-type amenities and businesses, especially in California, and you noticed a lot of donut shops,
drive-through
burgers and fries.
Los Angeles, a lot of donut shops. What's up with that, folks?
I wonder, is that like a hallmark of that era?
And it's not you know, chains. It's like, you know, Phil's Donuts or, you know, Jane's Donuts, or it's independent shops, which is great. I just, you know, wow, okay, where's our donuts? You know, we just have the chains of donuts here. I like to see, you know, Fred's Donuts. But that sounds mildly offensive. I want to see independent businesses thrive is what I'm trying to say.
Truly, truly. And that includes good directories and, I don't know, I mean, the certain search engines and certain providers and mm-hmm. stuff shouldn't have a monopoly on where to find things, especially when you're talking about maps.
Yes.
Because you end up using that a lot. As soon as you look for connectivity, sometimes there's no cellular, but to plan your trip, like, on the fly and just, you know, move around, takes a lot of good information about a local place so you can get in on time, you know, make sure things aren't closed.
Yeah, yeah. So the information we got about places that were open and weren't open or were even out of business was kind of disappointing. But something really was off about Waze, you know, the GPS program that gets you, I don't know how to describe it. You know, everybody uses it. It's the app that you use on your phone.
One of many navigation apps.
Yeah, but it's the one everyone uses. But it went berserk in California for some reason. Every time we started out someplace, it would contradict itself. It would say, turn left. And as soon as you turn left, it would say, nope, turn right. And at one point, it was just barking out commands one after the other. Make a U-turn, turn right, turn left. It was like some kind of Black Mirror episode. I was you know, screaming at the console, at my phone, saying, what is wrong with you? And almost getting us into accidents sometimes.
Meanwhile, I mean, among the practical considerations of some of that software is more advance notice. There's great alerts on a lot of these programs that help people drive and help people walk around, but advance notice of complicated lane switches and earlier notification of when you're to be ready to turn. I don't know if there's any granularity in some of the programs, but it just seems like that's a universal thing that it's always too late or it's correcting. Maybe that's because the GPS isn't as accurate.
Here's a suggestion. All right. This is how the prompt works. In 100 feet, make a left turn. No. How about you lead with that? Make a left turn in 100 feet, because by the time you get to make a left turn, I've done the 100 feet. All right, and I'm looking to make a U-turn at that point. It's really ridiculous, but it was mildly amusing, but very frustrating at the same time. I really enjoyed Seattle as well. We spent some time there. What an incredible place! I had the best gyro of my life in Seattle.
So much has changed around there, but you can still find tried and true favorite spots. I was definitely enjoying some of that and taking in some of what has changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of these places where you kind of have the old and the new coexisting. And that's the secret, folks. That's the secret to almost anything, is to have the old and the new, you know, next to each other. I point to London as an example of that. You know, they hold on to the old, but they embrace the new at the same time. And any good city, I think, knows how to do that. So that's really kind of cool.
Yeah, especially with sprawl, you know, you want to use your space judiciously, but it's just cool what is unearthed as people plan around it. One of the big things is the waterfront project has totally changed, and a lot of the older stuff that was covered by what was a raised highway.
Yeah, you pointed this out. That says there's buildings that have not seen the light of day, literally, in decades, and now this highway is gone, and all of a sudden you can see them. You see the old architecture. This is in the downtown area of Seattle, right?
Yeah, and there's like a water ferry terminal that is brand new. I'd read about it in the newspaper, you know, some stories about it. But yeah, a lot of that stuff was cool to see. As is changing out here, some of the roadways and the bike lane, bike trails for the highway out here, they're extending a lot of that pedestrian access. And it is cool to see the speed that some of that stuff is occurring.
Yeah, it all depends on how much people want something. And if they make noise about it, change tends to happen. Not nearly as fast as we wanted to, but it's, you know, we're optimistic about this.
But connecting bike trails to large, open kind of promenades, I guess, what was a pier, and then extending that, making those things wider along waterfronts and in, you know, thoroughfares like we're seeing out here. I saw reflective green lanes for the first time.
That's
like,
cool.
The green they use sometimes for bike lanes, I saw a newer kind of reflective paint they're using. So just little details. It's cool to see.
You saw that in Seattle.
Seattle. Okay. I'd like to see more of that out here. Although I think there's a lot of that kind of signage on the road for the trail access out here on Long Island.
We need to learn from each other, because we need more bike infrastructure out here. Seattle, you guys need more mass transit, because, you know, it's great that they figured out that it's a good idea to have light rail, but they only have one line, and it's going so slow as far as constructing more. It needs to be everywhere. It really needs to be everywhere. You know, we should tell this story quickly about our frustrating voyage back. For the first time in the entire trip, we took a plane from Seattle to New York, and the whole thing was based upon us having several hours before the last train to Stony Brook was heading out. You know, flying it to JFK, take the air train to Jamaica, hop on the train, you're done. Simple. Yeah, here's the problem. We flew. We have to say what we flew, because it's part of the story.
Oh, what?
I'm sorry. I have to do this. I don't usually give out company names.
That's just.
But the fact is, Alaska Airlines has a relationship with Alaska, which is going to come into the story in a second. We got on the plane. Everything was working just great. We had three rental cars in this entire trip. We had, I think, two the last episode we were talking about. Yeah, we rented a third one to get around Seattle. So it was pretty awesome. Everything went well.
An airline and a state.
Yeah. So okay. Well, wow. It was their idea to name them that. Now, Alaska Airlines, their hub seems to be in Seattle, even though it should be in Alaska, but I'm not going to dwell on that. We got on the plane. Everything seems to be going just fine. I seem to be sitting right exactly where that door that blows out on Boeing jets is. And, of course, it's a Boeing jet.
That's
so
an emergency door.
I'm dealing with that, okay? And then all of a sudden, the captain comes on the speaker and says, "Does anybody smell fish?" It's the most bizarre thing I ever heard. But apparently, Alaska Airlines is known for transporting fish from Alaska. It's part of what they do. And this captain was particularly sensitive to the smell of fish, which apparently there was some fish oil that leaked in the baggage compartment or whatever. I didn't smell a thing. I didn't smell anything. And honestly, I didn't really hear anybody else complaining. But he kept complaining, and he said, "Okay, so what we're probably going to have to do is empty this plane and get onto a new plane." Everyone's groaning, and I'm like, "Okay, so this is how the final leg of the trip gets messed up due to fish on an airplane." So eventually, we all got out of the plane and waited around for the new plane, which didn't come. Instead, what they did was they cleaned out the plane. And we even saw the captain leaving. And then about an hour and a half later, the captain came back and went into the plane. I could tell by the way people were moving that things weren't going well. So basically, the captain left again, and the announcement was made that, he wasn't happy with the progress that they made. He still smelled fish and wasn't going to fly, and they had denied him another plane. So he's getting into this fight with his own airline. After a while, they said, "You have to go to another gate all the way on the other side of the airport." I discovered there's a train inside the airport. I never knew about that train before. That's kind of
cool. I'll just say it is worth pointing out that what the captain says goes. If he's not flying, you're not flying.
No, I know that. I wasn't debating that.
Like,
I just
it wasn't like the company was going to win as far as us flying anywhere.
I wasn't really that keen on flying with a captain who's having a feud with the airline. I really wasn't into that whole concept. So eventually we went to the other side of the airport, got on a different plane, so I guess he won, or I don't know why we had to move. He said that this is better. We're going to try and make up time. I don't know how you do that, but here's the thing. After 3 hours, they have to compensate you. And this was 2 hours and 51 minutes. So they knew exactly what they were doing, all right? And I got to say, though, they had good Wi-Fi, so I was able to bitch about this online during the entire trip and get all kinds of Alaska Air representatives responding to me via Twitter. However, something happened that you saved me from, Kyle. People were responding to me from Alaska Airlines, except they weren't really from Alaska Airlines. They were responding on Twitter. Their handle even said Alaska Airlines. But they weren't real. They were fake. It was an attempt to get information out of me. I don't know what the end game was. I was about to give information to one of those, what I thought were helpful representatives, responding to my initial complaining tweet that tagged Alaska Air. And you said, no. A little bit more emphatic than that. Don't do that. Don't give them your information. You know better. You're just smack across the face. And that kind of woke me up. And, thank you.
Well, as soon as I sort of suggested it, you immediately realized it and were smacking your own face, I think, more than
anything.
Well,
I was very disappointed in myself for falling for it, or almost falling for
it.
Well,
it's so easy to do. I guess we can talk about this another time, but the accounts and making fake accounts, it's hard to police, and a lot of customer service is done over social media nowadays. But when you start getting into, like, DMing and all of that, you got to kind of double-check all that stuff. But yeah. Anyway, that's a subject for another day.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow's show. The end of the story, we arrived at JFK, but we arrived too late for that last train to Stony Brook. However, and this goes back into the mass transit thing and why it's so important to have mass transit, the trains to Ronkonkoma were still running. They run pretty much all night because it's electric, something we want to have out in Stony Brook. So we simply took a train to Ronkonkoma and got an expensive cab to Stony Brook, and that was that. Except the next day, we got a credit from Alaska Airlines that, guess what, equaled the amount of the cab. So synchronicity or whatever. While we were gone, boy, was this place hit hard by a storm, a freak storm, you might call it. Now, I want to read you parts of a story from the Times Beacon news conglomerate out here. According to the New York State Weather Risk Communication Center, Stony Brook recorded, get ready, 9.4 inches of rain in the 24 hours between Sunday, August 18th and Monday, August 19th, amounting to a rainfall that is not just a once-in-a-lifetime event, but a one-in-a-thousand-year event. Yeah. Think of what was happening in the year 1024. I don't really know, to be honest, but probably a lot was different.
A lot of bronze.
Yeah. At a Monday press conference, County Executive Ed Romaine spoke about the shock many Long Islanders experienced. This storm was not predicted for northern Suffolk, he said. The storm was over Connecticut and probably traveled south. When you get almost 10 inches of rain, that's a once-in-a-lifetime event. Unfortunately, these once-in-a-lifetime events seem to be coming more than that. I don't think we're going to have to wait another 100 years for another storm like this. It tells you the impact that climate change is having on our weather. That's from Ed Romaine, a Republican, our county executive. He is a good guy. You know, I won't say that about many Republicans, but he gets it. He gets environmentalism. He gets preservation. He gets climate change. He admits that climate change is real. And that's what we need in a leader. So I'm happy to hear him say that, horrified at what happened to make him say that. Stony Brook Village, Harbor Road was split in half. Yeah, for those of you who have been in Stony Brook and aren't there right now, you need to know what happened. The Mill Pond destroyed. The Mill Pond was destroyed in Stony Brook Village. What I mean by destroyed was it's not a pond anymore. There's no water in it. All the water drained out when the dam collapsed. Now, the Mill Pond, the mill is still there and is still operating. That is incredible. The historic grist mill, it's structurally sound. It was built in 1699. Now, in 1750, the dam broke for the first time. It broke again in the 1800s. The last time it broke was 1910. And now, 2024. Now, devastation like this has been all around the area. When you have 10 inches of rain in a day, all kinds of unpredictable things happen. It's going to take a very long time to fix. They're saying the damage will amount to at least $25 million. That's a minimum. And it's really open to debate how long this is going to take. Smithtown, Nisqually River Dam broke from nearly 10 inches of rain. Two residents were saved by members of the Smithtown Fire Department as they were trapped in the second floor of their home. This is despite the town's recent stormwater and drain infrastructure upgrades. Rocky Point, extensively impacted as well. Romaine said, I tried to take a tour of most of the damage this morning. Several catchment basins overflowed, went down Hagerman Landing Road, and the tops of all the cars in sight had mud. The mudslide that came down Hagerman Landing Road was easily 7 to 9 feet. It left its mark on the trees and the houses, right up to the windows. We had to rescue someone down there from their rooftop. This is here on Long Island. This doesn't happen here. At about 3 a.m. Monday in Port Jefferson, a rush of stormwater cascaded down Main Street, past CVS, affecting local property and flooding the Port Jefferson Fire Station. And it had a huge impact on Theater 3 as well, which always seems to be impacted by floods. And this one was worse than any of the previous ones. Huntington, according to a Town of Huntington press release, the highway department took to the roads at the early onset of the storm. After surveying the town, they reported approximately 10 sinkholes and minimal trees down. Flooding, however, was the predominant issue, with the town reporting heavy flooding in a few areas. They claim all affected areas will be rebuilt. Until the next time. Now, the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, is warning rescuers to please don't relocate fish from the pond disaster. The fish remaining in the remnants of Mill Pond are an invasive carp species. That's a statement from the department released to a blog called Greater Long Island. These non-native fish may possess diseases harmful to native fish, should not be relocated to another water body for risk of damaging that ecosystem. It's interesting, too, when you go down to the Stony Brook Mill Pond to see the remnants of it, there are all these signs that predated the disaster, one of which is warning about human effects on the environment. And it's kind of an ironic sign to be seen there now, because that has, of course, already happened.
I was incorrect. It's like the Iron Age. 1024 was the year the first evidence of printed money is ascribed to, as well as, I think, Henry II died then as well.
Oh, so, really? Is that so?
But do you think the pond was there?
Do I think the pond was there in 1024?
Seems like it was unnaturally sort of.
Well, the dam
yeah.
wasn't there because humans
the mill
built the dam,
yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that Native Americans didn't build that.
Maybe some kind of beavers.
I think it's people in the 1600s that did that.
Okay,
Europeans came
so
over
about 500 years
and,
later.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about the Smithtown Library, which was also majorly affected. Cleanup crews in white hazmat suits collected debris and damaged materials from the Smithtown Library's basement, tossing them into two large dumpsters last Wednesday morning. Sunday night's storm caused catastrophic damage to the basement, with floodwaters poured in from above, breaking down walls, offices, and an elevator shaft. They also caused untold damage to a prized historical collection dating to the 17th century and destroyed more than 21,000 AV materials. Water had risen at least 10 feet, almost reaching, if not touching, the basement ceiling, according to the library director, Robert Lusak. The most heartbreaking damage was to the library's Long Island History Room, which Lusak called its crown jewel, where librarians stored hundreds of historical materials, such as maps and books dating back to the 1600s. Perhaps the most priceless item in their possession was the patent of Richard Smith, the namesake and one of the primary patentees of Smithtown. On Wednesday afternoon, an archivist said much of the collection can be saved. The Smithtown building site at the lowest point of State Route 25A, it sits at the lowest point of State Route 25A, but the historical documents, get this, they were thought to be safe, stored in a locked room with a weather-protected door designed to prevent water from breaching the room. But the flooding was so intense that the water broke through the room's walls of sheetrock while the door stayed intact. Yeah. If it was in the daytime and it happened when patrons and staff would be down in the level, they would have been killed instantly, said Lusak. Climate change is real, folks. And it paid us a visit. Just seeing that, just going to, it's a tourist attraction now. Every time you go down to that mill pond, there are people flocking to see it and to just be in awe of what nature has wrought.
It'll be repaired, and people will restore it.
And then it'll happen again.
Okay, that's a little bit dark, but yeah.
It's maybe a little bit true. I mean, this is what people have been warning about.
Maybe it'll be repaired with some sort of additional protection or overflow or something.
Uh-huh. Okay. I was saying Ed Romain gets it. He's one of these Republicans that actually is in touch with reality, and he's our county executive, so that is, I think, a good thing. Nick LaLota, our representative in Congress, is not in touch with reality. And you can see this almost every day. But recently, he attacked his opponent, John Avalon, a Democrat, by saying this on Twitter. And this was really kind of interesting. John Avalon, Democrat of Manhattan, he put that in parentheses as if it's an official title, gets thousands in New York City property tax breaks as a Manhattan resident while deceiving Suffolk voters about his true residence. Long Island saw through this in 2012, 2018, and 2022, and we won't be duped by another out-of-town elitist trying to win our votes. Yeah, so this is what Nick Lolota does, is try and spread the hatred around and the fear and the resentment against people from a different place. So, but when you do a little bit of research, you find that Nick Lolota does not even live in the district that he represents. He lives in Amityville, not in the first district. So it's kind of an odd thing to attack somebody for not living in the district when you don't live in the district yourself. A little dangerous there. In fact, on Twitter, there were a number of replies saying, you still don't live here, Nick? Hypocrite much? dude, you don't even live in the district. Take a seat. But you support Donald Trump, so Long Island should not support you? John Avalon for Congress, said someone else. Did you move yet to New York 1 District? You said you would when you got elected. Weird post, considering you don't live in CD1. You didn't think this one through, Congressman. Still lives in Amityville outside of the district you represent. You either think your base is really stupid or your campaign staff is. I like reading these. what else do we have here? And you don't live in the district either. Talking about tax breaks. Where the hell is our SALT deduction? You ran on it. Broken promises. I say let's send someone else. And if they don't come through, send someone else. Now, interesting thing, the SALT deduction. This is a $10,000 cap on property tax. Paying property tax, you can deduct that from more tax. Since the Trump tax reduction, remember the whole Trump tax thing to bail out billionaires? They put a cap of $10,000 on this. There wasn't a cap before. Trump put that cap there. Now, Nick Lolota has been running on getting rid of that cap because it's a popular thing to run on, but what he doesn't mention is that the guy he supports is the one who put it there in the first place, i.e., he helped put it there himself. So, again, hypocrisy 101. It's something that you probably shouldn't call attention to. So, yeah, when you're upset about the SALT deduction, think about how it got there. It wasn't through Democrats. It was through Trump. There's a lot more of these replies. Your cult leader stole our SALT deduction. That's one person gets it there. But here's the thing, okay? Now, I mentioned that Nick Lolota does not live in this congressional district, yet he purports to represent it. You know who does live in this particular congressional district? John Avalon. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much research. It didn't take me long at all to look up the records and find that he is registered in Sag Harbor. Sag Harbor, within the district, has been for years. So what the hell are you talking about? You're gonna point to somebody and say they don't live in the district when voting records say they do and you don't? That is pretty low. That is pretty stupid. That is pretty sleazy. Okay, moving along, because we just don't have time for all this. That mask ban in Nassau County, yeah, basically the mask ban has been put into effect. It was put into effect after demonstrations against Israeli policy where people wore masks to prevent themselves from retaliation, which is exactly what happens if you attend a pro-Palestinian rally. You will be blacklisted, you will be identified, you will be harassed, you will be followed. I'm not making this up. This is what happens. It should not happen. People should be able to disagree and voice their concerns. Nassau County's fascist county executive, unlike the one we have in Suffolk County, his response to this was to make it illegal to hide your face. And guess what? We have our first arrested person as a result of this. Now, people said this would unfairly target certain classes of people, including people of color. And guess what? This is a person of color that got arrested. Imagine that. Weslin Omar Ramirez Castillo of Hicksville. Sounds dangerous, doesn't he? 18 years old. He's charged with violating Nassau's mask ban and weapons possession. when you say it like that, I'm going to read the headline from Newsday. Westland Omar Ramirez Castillo of Hicksville charged with violating NASA's mask ban, weapons possession. Oh, boy. Lock him up and throw away the key. That just sounds so dangerous right there. Well, he's 18 years old. He had a 14-inch knife. He was wearing a mask as he walked down a Levittown street. The first arrest for violating Nassau County's controversial mask ban. If he had been walking down a street in Suffolk County, nothing would have happened to him. He was reported to police as a suspicious male, as he probably is reported as a suspicious male frequently by the people of Nassau County. Dressed in black and wearing a mask to conceal his identity. Well, I don't know how you can say why he's wearing a mask. There's all kinds of reasons to wear a mask. But, okay, fine. So, reported for being suspicious, and the person reporting him knowing why he's wearing a mask. And charged with fourth-degree criminal possession of a weapon, second-degree obstructing governmental administration, and Nassau County Local Law 1-2024 Title 90 Mask Transparency Act. Mask ban makes it a misdemeanor, punishable by up to a $1,000 fine and or a year in jail. For anyone wearing a mask or any facial covering to hide their identity while in public places, the law exempts those who wear masks for health or religious reasons. The county's Republican-dominated legislature approved the ban earlier this month, despite some advocates arguing it would impinge on the privacy of those with disabilities or medical conditions, and could be more harshly applied in communities of color. Well, the second part you got right, but I don't understand fighting the part where they distinctly say the law exempts those who wear masks for health reasons. Well, okay, if they say that, it's hard to fight them and say this law will affect people with disabilities or medical conditions. I'm not saying they're not going to do that anyway. I'm saying that that's not the best battle that you can fight. How about freedom of speech? How about freedom of identity, being allowed to be anonymous? Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, fascist in chief, said in a statement, "Unless someone has a medical condition or a religious imperative, people should not be allowed to cover their face in a manner that hides their identity when in public." I've got one word for you, Blakeman. Halloween. It's coming. Yeah, get ready. We're going to descend upon Nassau County, and nobody's going to know who we are.
Well, what if you're just wearing someone else's face?
Okay, well, there's that.
I mean, not real face, but like you suggest, a mask of a different face. What about his face?
Blakeman's face.
I mean,
it didn't take long to figure that out.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You know, we can brainstorm after the show. I'd love to do that. Moving on. We have some cannabis news. Governor Kathy Hochul said yesterday a crackdown on unlicensed cannabis shops has resulted in the padlocking of 345 businesses in the last 3 months. Yay! Hooray! Oh, boy. Eight of those.
Hey, don't be sarcastic.
No, eight of those were... sarcasm is my middle name. Eight of those were on Long Island, four in each county. That's four in Nassau, four in Suffolk. The governor touted the work of a new task force combining personnel from state police, the Office of Cannabis Management, and the tax department, which has blitzed illicit cannabis shops over the last 3 months. Okay, you know what? I'm not against that. I'm not against shutting down people who don't have the right to be selling the things they're selling. But when you don't open places where people are allowed to do that, makes you wonder, what are people supposed to do? You know, because here in Brookhaven is the town that encompasses Stony Brook. We have villages, we have towns, we have counties and states, and that's how it works here. We have a situation where Brookhaven Town has opted in, meaning that they say, yeah, it's okay to sell marijuana here, to have dispensaries, but we're going to make it so difficult that nobody's going to be able to do it. Now, the zoning restrictions include bans on recreational cannabis shops within 500 feet of homes. Now, I want everybody to calculate this. Within 500 feet of homes, 1,000 feet of schools, as well as a church or other place of religious worship, park, playground, or playing field, library, hospital, or similar public or semi-public place of general congregation or non-degree granting instruction slash programs, including self-defense, dance, swimming, gymnastics, and other sports. Okay. And, oh, on top of that, any dispensary has to be at least a mile away from another dispensary, and they're not permitted in downtown. I mean, what is the fear here? Swimming? Dance? What do you think people are going to be doing? I don't understand these restrictions at all. And I didn't understand them when they were first imposed. Now, I want to read you an excerpt from an article here, which is rather telling. Recreational marijuana has been legalized in New York State since 2021, allowing for adults 21 and older to possess up to 3 ounces of cannabis. Despite Brookhaven being one of just 4 Long Island towns to allow sales with conditions, no locations have opened shop within the township. The first recreational cannabis shop on Long Island opened in Farmingdale, which is in the town of Oyster Bay. Now, town council member Jonathan Kornreich is a Democrat from Stony Brook. He said in a recent phone interview he can't think of locations in his council district 1, which extends from Stony Brook to Port Jefferson Station and Terryville, can't think of locations in his district that would fit these requirements. Not a one. However, he has received calls from those eager to open cannabis shops, but in order to do so, they would need an exemption to the zoning rules. Now, he says there are already people who are contacting us saying, we found a property. It meets most of the requirements, but not all of them. Can we get an exception? And people are already looking for exceptions to a brand new rule, and there's a lot of pressure. Now, Jonathan Kornreich is not keen on granting exemptions, in large part because the rules are new. He also worries that once one exemption is granted, the town will have to approve the next person who comes along wanting the exemption. I am extremely reluctant to immediately start walking back the rules that we've just finished establishing, he said. I think for now we should probably stick with no exceptions. No exceptions, no dispensaries, not a single one in the town of Brookhaven. A self-described progressive, Kornreich said he understands the benefits to legalization from a personal liberty point of view, as well as the benefits of the town gaining tax revenue from sales, which is why the town council chose to opt in the first place. If people want to smoke this stuff, it's probably not as dangerous as alcohol, which is legal, he said. We also have to figure out how to balance that out against things like traffic safety, and how do we monitor for people driving under the influence because it does affect reaction times. And yeah, these are points, but you're not going to solve all the issues before you move ahead with what is now legal. You know, just because there are still problems with, say, you know, people drinking too much alcohol, you don't shut down the entire industry until you figure it all out and make it perfect. This is something that every state, every region that has legalized this is dealing with. And I suggest we deal with that without shutting down the industry. Now, the Drug Prevention Coalition, which is an advocacy group in Kornreich's district that is focused on drug prevention for youth, is trying to advocate and educate against underage cannabis consumption and is doing as much outreach as possible. Kornreich said he is concerned that allowing cannabis stores in downtowns and smoking in public will normalize cannabis smoking for children. I don't think it's going to be healthy for our kids to create this permissive environment where people are just doing it all over the place, he said. Okay, giant leap of logic there. Giant leap of logic. You have bars everywhere. In Port Jefferson, for instance, you have bars next to bars. Farmingdale, bars next to everywhere. It's not an issue as far as allowing them to open. You don't see kids drinking openly in streets outside of bars. You know, even though they're aware that these places exist. Why? Because there's regulation, because there's oversight. In fact, the fact that these places are there probably makes it harder for kids to indulge in things like that because these places are very sensitive to that kind of a thing. The look of having cannabis stores around them, much like vape shops, he said, is not great. Another concern Kornreich has is the public being inconsiderate and smoking in parks and other community spaces. Yeah, get ready for this. I think most cigarette smokers are pretty considerate, and they will go off to the side and they stay out of the way. But people who are smoking weed, they just seem to be okay with walking down the street and doing it. where is this guy hanging out? I've never seen that. Weed smokers are the most considerate of all people who smoke anything. Cigarette smokers, not so much. Definitely not so much. These are misconceptions. And I understand how he got these misconceptions. Because, you know, if we listen to the fearmongers and the naysayers, they will tell you that cannabis is a gateway drug and it's going to lead to all kinds of horrible behavior and it's going to hurt our kids, none of which is true. And I say to Jonathan Cornwright, please, please visit a dispensary. Go to Farmingdale, go to Queens, go to Manhattan, go to any dispensary where people are lined up to get the cannabis of their choice. Listen to the conversations that take place there. You will see how educated people are, how responsible people are, people who work there, and the people who go to these places, because they're not the people you think they are. They're your neighbors. They're your relatives. They are incredibly decent and upstanding people who recognize the value of cannabis in their lives. And, you know, look into that as well. Look into the medical advantages and how this genuinely helps people. And ask yourself why you're so prejudiced against it. What has affected you? And you'll probably find that it's some agency, some group of people who are dead set against any of this, just as it's been for decades in our country. Look, it's legal, all right? It's legal. It's prospering throughout the country in various places. Kyle and I have visited so many different places that have dispensaries, and we've always found the same thing. These are well-regulated, responsible establishments where no kid can possibly be influenced by their existence. You just have to educate yourself a bit. Get out there, learn something, listen to people. Right now, and this article I read, it's a year old. So all this talk about, well, this legislation is all new. These rules are new. We can't just immediately grant exceptions. It's been a year. Now what do you say? There's not a single dispensary that's open in Brookhaven. What's the excuse now? How many years are we going to drag this out? It's legal in this town. How do you just basically make it illegal again, even though it's legal? It's not right. It's definitely not right. I'm sure you have an opinion on this, Carl.
Yeah, where do I start? I believe what you're saying. I think it is sort of a de facto ban because there is no flexibility, like the zoning example. And I mean, and that's just in stark contrast to the amount of vacancies a lot of these central corridors have. And I mean, fine, if there's businesses clamoring to be there, then there must be some other spots that are somewhat viable and opening up and could house one of these businesses. And the overall, I don't know, the numbers I think you need to really look at, like as far as cannabis users that get behind the wheel in places where it has been legal even longer than New York. And I think there's already sort of protocols and a lot of supervision of the roadways and, you know, negligent or kind of reckless driving is itself, you know, no matter what it may be causing, it is of a general concern, and alcohol itself is a big driver of that. I think if you look at the numbers, so some of those are like misrepresentations of the concerns. And as far as we're normalizing it, I mean that is the exact point: is we are normalizing it, but you have to do it in a responsible way and not act as though it isn't already being smoked all around anyway. And I think that is the point, is that it is something that we are going to not stigmatize and not act as though we can wish it out of existence. And by, you know, maybe making parks and places of having guidelines or you know, not making all of these places potentially criminal zones for this. I mean, yes, there's logic to, like, a place that's going to be doing child care or education, stuff like that. You can't keep bringing children up as the example. I mean, no one's advocating for children to be smoking, and that's, as you pointed out, something that's much harder to do when these establishments are regulated. And then as far as the sweeps or whatever, I think that's critical because a lot of the packaging and stuff at the illicit or unlicensed stores is directed. It's more aligned with, like, vaping and some of the concerns there.
Again, it's good to shut down the illicit businesses, but you have to have legitimate businesses that people will go to instead. And when they do, they will find that things are much more under control and responsible. When you make it impossible for those shops to even be open, you're going to go right back to the black market where people are doing this in alleyways. I mean, do you think people aren't going to be smoking pot because you won't allow a cannabis store to open anywhere in the town? No, of course they will be, and they probably will be a lot less responsible. So, you know, this has been legalized for a reason, and we should be embracing it, not turning it away.
And it's a huge problem as far as the overall success of the state program. So I really hope the state weighs in or, like, has some kind of say in this or is able to use the area to provide access as much as anywhere else. And it does need to be doubled and tripled to come up to, like, a reasonable capacity, because it's, I mean, you think about it then, because the more of those retailers that are open, the more tax is accruing. And I think maybe that could even be adjusted. Right now, things are incredibly expensive, and the quality, I mean, it's a glut of stuff that has been sitting around, I think, packaged for a really long time.
Yeah.
There's been a huge problem with that, with, like, growers. And I just think the whole market itself has suffered from these slow rollouts. And
these are honest farmers that are being hurt because we can't figure out how to get dispensaries open to sell something that is legal.
And, I mean, there's so much that, because we're actually refining and processing this stuff at a professional level, there's a lot of, like, additional businesses and consumption models that we're missing out on sort of pioneering in a way that New York could. I was at a bar that you could have infused drinks when I was in other parts of the country. And I know in California and in the West in general, the growing and industry itself has been there for quite a while. Well, to match that, to get the quality and the value at a even close, you have to support that in a wider way. And it's very slow and sort of disappointing. Like, I don't know, where's the good weed? It seems like it's stunted. And I think it is this retail access stuff that's just kind of hindering the overall growth of it, because it could be doing, I think, even better than it is.
Absolutely. And every time we go to one of these places, whether it's in Nevada or California, Washington, Illinois, Canada, it's positive. The people are educated, responsible, and just very knowledgeable about what it is they're selling or what it is they're buying. So it's extremely important to see the positive effects of this.
And think about it. If you're making places for safe consumption that are private, that are sort of a mixed venue of some kind of like a beer garden or other outdoor or mixed use kind of venue, you're taking people that would otherwise be in those public areas of concern or right next to the library or wherever you think potheads are doing those crazy potheads. No, I mean, I think the businesses around where people go to consume as well as where to get access to cannabis should be thought through and really encouraged so that there is a place for all of this stuff and it is otherwise normal and kind of, I don't know, hard to even notice because people are able to get ready access and go on with their lives and not be sort of looking for a place or in part of something that's only partially rolled out.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. One thing, though, we mentioned Jonathan Kornreich. He's a council member of Brookhaven Town Council. That's one person. And I think he's been misguided. I think he means well. Hopefully he takes the time to become educated on this and see the positive benefits. You can visit BrookhavenNY.gov, excuse me, BrookhavenNY.gov to see all the council people there and give them your input. But please be respectful and realize these people probably want what's best, but maybe they need a little bit more information. But Jonathan Kornreich is the person that we've been reading quotes from because of that story from a year ago, which didn't age very well. So we'll just have to see if there are changes. But boy, you know, come on, Brookhaven, get your act together. It's well past time to catch up with the rest of the rest of the country.
Get this, you can grow now privately, so that's something that people have to contend with.
Exactly. Well, that's another show. Hey, we're out of time for now. OTW at 2600.com. Next week, it'll be September. See you then.
Bye.
I'll be alone each and every night. While you're away, don't forget to write. Bye-bye, so long, farewell. Bye-bye, so long. See you in September. See you when the summer's through.
Here we are.
Bye, baby, goodbye.
Saying goodbye at the station.
Bye, baby, goodbye.
Summer vacation.
Bye, baby.
Summer love.